I'm Jane Mills. Welcome to Behind the Goggles podcast. I've been absent for a while due to life and other projects. However, I've been compelled to share the story of our guest today, Liv Warwick. Liv is a fellow Elwood Seagull, and her swimming achievements over the past few years have been impressive, to say the least. I hope you enjoy hearing the journey of her past as a water polo swimmer to now becoming an ice mile legend. If you'd like further information on what we chat about today, you can go to our website, which is www.behindthegogglespodcast.com. Enjoy. Welcome back, everybody, to another very belated episode of Behind the Goggles podcast. And the reason I've come out of the woodwork today is to have a chat with one of my fellow Seagull swimmers, and that is Liv Warwick. Good morning, Liv. How are you?
Good morning, Jane. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, well, normally we would be swimming in the bay at this time, but unfortunately we've had a lot of rain and it's made it not so pleasant to be out there with
the
debris.
It's very unfortunate. There's even a rainbow right now, I think, which
is
really quite horrible when you can't get in.
I know. At least we're still looking at the water,
yes,
so
exactly.
A little bit connected. Yes, so I think the first time that I met you, about 3 years ago, I think?
Yeah, I think it was. It was sort of, I think, August 2020, when I just started getting into the open water because all the pools were closed, obviously.
That's right. Yeah. And I met you and you had just had shoulder surgery.
I just broke my arm. So I started swimming open water, like really getting into it in August.
Yes.
And then I fractured my arm really badly in September, so I had to have surgery and metal plates put in. And
so does that affect your swimming at all?
Luckily, not really. Not as much as I thought at the time. I was obviously quite devastated when it happened.
Yeah.
The only really lingering issue I have now is sometimes a bit of shoulder pain, which I think is just because my arm's a bit weak. My left shoulder does get a little bit sore sometimes, so I just have to be conscious of my technique and try not to overdo it, which is hard for me because I'm very addicted.
Yes, well, you are. Yeah. I'll agree. So when did you swim in the pools? Did I remember you saying that you played water polo?
Yes, that's right. So I always swam growing up.
But
I was never really just into competing. I don't know, it wasn't really my thing.
Yeah.
And then my cousin actually introduced me to water polo, which I really loved. Again, I wasn't, you know, amazing at it, but I was sort of good enough to make the state team for the under-18s.
Oh, great.
Which was just a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed it.
Because it's not a very common sport, is
no.
it? It's usually private schools because they have their own pools. But was yours with the community?
No, it was with... I started playing with the Footscray team.
Fantastic.
And then obviously onto the Vic team. And yeah, it was really fun, and I just sort of unfortunately fell out of it as I got a bit older and started uni, and I just sort of stopped doing both, really, stopped swimming and stopped playing water polo.
And then what prompted you to get back in the swimming?
Yeah, I was really trying to get back into the pool, like pre-COVID.
Yeah.
It was sort of my New Year's resolution. It's really the only exercise I enjoy.
So I thought, not a runner?
Definitely not a runner. Very uncoordinated on land. So I was like, I've got to do something.
Yeah.
So I was really trying to get back into the pool. And then, of course, obviously, all the pools closed.
Mm.
And I was living so close to the beach. I just thought, why don't I just get in the ocean?
Yeah.
And I'll never forget the first few swims I did in the ocean. Obviously, I didn't know anybody, so I was on my own. I made my now husband come and stand on the beach just to watch me, and I was so nervous. I think I probably swam about 200 metres and then got out because I was just, I don't know, I got a little bit heebie-jeebie on my own in the ocean, which...
Well, people who don't swim in the bay, that's what they think, but it's as if they think we did never feel that way.
Yes.
But we all did, and it's the mind. Your mind
completely
starts racing, and it probably still happens to you now in any open water scenario.
It does, and it's even now if I swim on my own, I'm definitely not as relaxed as with a group.
And you see, like, the shadow of your arm come over, you're like, oh, what was that?
Exactly. You can't help it. I'm like, you know, I swim here every day with a friend, and then as soon as I'm on my own, I'm a bit, ooh, you know, should we be doing this?
Yeah. I know. It's,
It's funny, those sorts of outdoor, like in a pool, you're fine. You're not going, nothing's going to happen to
exactly.
you in a pool. But in the unpredictable open water, anything can happen, really.
Yeah, it is. It's
true. And it's just your body being cautious, I suppose, protecting you.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I know. Everybody's okay so far.
Exactly. So exactly.
That's good. You were swimming in the pool and then the COVID happened and then you came to the beach and then how did you meet up with the seagulls?
It was actually on an online webinar. I joined to sort of learn some skills on open water swimming that was run by Swimwell, like a free community event.
Oh yes.
And they just kept saying, you know, it's good to swim with a buddy. It's really good to swim with a buddy. And eventually I just wrote in the chat, I was like, how do I find a buddy? I need a buddy.
Yeah.
And luckily one of the seagulls just replied, you know, on the chat saying, where are you based?
Nice.
I swim with a group called the Seagulls at Elwood.
Yeah.
And she added me to the group and that was that.
Now you're our number one flag bearer.
So I do, you know, it's completely changed my life really, because now I can't imagine sort of not swimming minimum 5 or 6 days a week.
Yeah.
Whereas before it was very much maybe twice a month I'd be getting in the pool.
So you kind of went from those very humble beginnings to then saying, oh, do you know what? Swimming 200 metres, that's not enough for me. How about 5?
Yeah.
5 kilometres.
Yeah.
In the middle of winter. Oh, and I'm not going to wear a wetsuit. I'm going to go across the channel from Point Lonsdale to Portsea or where, vice versa.
Yeah.
So I think you pretty much got into that fairly quickly, didn't you?
Yeah, I think I was quite lucky for not really maintaining my training that it seemed to sort of come back quite quickly.
Right.
So I remember sort of within the first maybe month or two, I was starting to do 1 kilometre swims.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know, it just never really felt that much to push it up to 2, up to 3. I think the more difficult thing for me was obviously the mental, you know, I'd find myself getting a little bit bored or thinking I couldn't do 4 kilometres.
Yes,
and
yes.
So it was getting over that part, which again is really, you need a buddy. You need the seagulls.
That's right. Yeah, even your watch is not that much of a motivator to say keep going.
Yeah.
It's more like, there, you've done enough.
Yes.
Go back.
Exactly. It's very easy to just, you know, want to get out if you're on your own.
Yeah, that's
Whereas
right.
It's great motivation to have other people, you know, also wanting to stretch their distance or their time.
Yeah. So you'd read about the Rip Swim online, or how did you find out about it initially?
That's a good question. I think it was sort of word of mouth. From just the swimming community, and then I read up about it online.
Maybe you heard my podcast of Grant
Siegel. Definitely. And, you know, everyone knows his name, sort of, in
exactly,
the community, in the Rip Swim. And I'd swum through one winter, and I just sort of thought, you know, why not have something to aim for by swimming through another?
Yeah.
Sort of a good motivator.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just decided to sort of do it, and unfortunately at the time there weren't any seagulls who were keen to do the winter Rip Swim.
Well, we were kind of a new group, and most of the people were very new to open water swimming,
yes.
So that's a bit of a challenge.
But
I know, I remember we were all like, oh, you're amazing.
But it was really lovely, you know, even when I finished that swim with my great team of swimmers who I met in the Rip Swim. I still remember finishing up on the beach and, you know, there's a group of seagulls who've driven all the way down literally just to watch me walk out of the water at the end. Like, it's not a great spectator sport swimming.
It's not.
So, yeah, it's just the community is really so lovely.
Yeah. And I've never seen you in a wetsuit. Do you own a wetsuit?
I don't own a wetsuit.
No.
No. And I think I'll just try not to ever buy one.
So going into that cold water, I mean, it is the middle of winter and it is deep water and the temperature is about, 10, 11 degrees Celsius.
Yeah.
So that's a challenge for anybody.
Yes.
Are you allowed to wear the polyurethane, what are they called?
The caps.
The propylene
caps
in the Rip Swim?
I'm not sure, actually. I don't recall anybody wearing them.
Mm.
So we just had
similar
sort of bathers in a cap.
Similar to channel conditions.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
We were quite lucky, actually, on our swim. I think it was, you know, sort of just under 12 degrees.
Right.
So it was actually warmer than the bay at the time.
Right.
So we'd been swimming, you know, at Elwood and it had really dropped that year. I think it got to under 9 at one point. So 12 degrees really was quite nice.
Yeah, incrementally, those every degree makes a huge difference.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So you completed that swim and everybody thought, wow, that's so good. And then you inspired a bunch of other women and other swimmers to go and do the summer version, which people were allowed to wear wetsuits and... Yeah. Still very challenging, not trying to take away from anything that people did in the summer months, but I mean, just to do that channel across that channel there is very
definitely
a great achievement. But and then something happened, Liv, that you went, oh, that's not cold enough, I'll have to go colder,
have to find colder. Yeah, it's really, I can't quite sort of pinpoint why I decided to start aiming for an ice mile, I think.
Ice mile.
Yeah.
So tell me, what is exactly the ice mile?
So the ice mile is a swim that's ratified by this International Ice Swimming Association, and you have to swim standard miles. It's just over 1.6 kilometres.
Right.
In water that's under 5 degrees, and you can only wear a standard swimming costume and a cap. And goggles, obviously, so no wetsuit and no neoprene cap either. So it's sort of...
I guess flippers are out.
Flippers are out, unfortunately. That would have been great. Yeah, it's. I'd say it's relatively well known in the swimming community. I think it's always a little bit of a crazy idea that a lot of people have in the back of their heads to aim for, and I think it's quite popular with sort of, you know, English Channel swimmers.
Yes.
After they've done that, they're looking for the next challenge.
Yeah, because I mean that is a big drop in temperature.
Yes, definitely. I think any, you know, once you get under 10 degrees, I think every degree drop is really noticeable. So 5 and under is...
So where do they propose that you do this swimming? Because obviously the bay is not going below 5 degrees.
No.
And there's not... You can't swim in a pool for that distance.
No. So it's quite challenging, unfortunately, in Australia to find a location.
Yeah.
But we're really lucky to be able to do it in a pond up in Thredbo. So just at the end of all the ski fields.
It's so appealing.
Where all the snow kind of melts off.
Yes.
There's a little pond there and we're able to set up sort of an 80-metre course. So
we
had to do about 20 laps of this course.
They put some buoys in there, do they?
Yes.
And you just loop around.
Yeah.
Okay. And you prepared for that by not just swimming in the bay every day in your bathers in winter, but...
Yes, so I also purchased a chest freezer from a cafe that was closing down.
Yes.
And I sealed it all up and I've sort of run that at home as an ice bath.
Right.
So I really made an effort to try and get in at least every day for just 3 minutes. You know, not long sessions.
Right,
but I think, you know, I'd heard from Wyatt Song, who's the ice mile mentor sort of in Australia.
What's his name?
Wyatt Song.
Wyatt Song.
And he had told us that sort of repeated exposure was sometimes better than those longer sessions.
Right.
So the longer sessions are really quite draining on your body, and it's sort of more important to just be able to get in every day.
And
so I took that.
Acclimatized so that shock is lessened.
Yes, exactly. Get used to that initial, you know, because your body does sort of gasp for air when you get into that water.
That's right, your lungs expel the air automatically.
It is quite a shock to the system.
Yeah. So when you're swimming a distance at that temperature, though, I mean, you can't train to do it, can you?
No,
really?
that's the tough thing about, you know, aiming for this in Australia is that you really just cannot practice. I think there are some locations in New South Wales, like Wentworth Falls, where I think the water does get to around 6 or 7.
Right.
So I know a few swimmers go there and practice a bit of distance. But in Victoria, unfortunately, even though you'd think we would have more options, there's just everywhere sort
Ballarat.
Of closed. Yeah, apparently Creswick or Ballarat, but I didn't get out there, unfortunately. So I actually thought that would be a good spot to try. But I sort of just kept swimming in the bay for as long as I could, like trying to stay in for as long as I could every morning and then do an ice bath every afternoon. And that was it, really.
Right. And then you drove to Thredbo, which is quite a drive, really, isn't
it? Yeah, it's a bit of a drive. I think about 8 hours once you stop and, you know, get some food.
Yes.
So we went up mid-August, the 12th of August was the first attempt.
Yeah. Well, that's a spoiler alert right there.
So we drove up. We actually had amazing conditions on the day. It was...
Oh, I think I remember it was a really sunny day.
It was really sunny.
It was lovely. Yeah, it was one of those crisp beautiful winter days.
Yeah. I think the outside temperature was about 7 degrees. The sun was out. There was no snow on the ground. The pond was a bit frozen, so we did break it up in the morning.
Right.
But then by the time I was swimming, at least, it sort of warmed to 4.5, which is ideal.
Right. Like yes, because it has to be below, but you don't want it like 1 degree.
Exactly. It has to be under 5, but you really want it as close to 5 as you can get it.
And how many other people in the group? You were saying we, so...
Yeah, I think there were about 9 swimmers the 12th of August. So a group of swimmers from Victoria and from New South Wales.
Right, okay. That's quite a few, more than I thought.
So it was really, it was good to sort of have other swimmers there, and we had lots of support. Which was very necessary. You need actually a lot of people to come with you.
Yes. Is there any medical people there?
Yes, yes. So to be ratified by ISA, you have to have the medical officer present.
Right.
Who can sort of guide you through the recovery and then sign off that they were there and they witnessed your swim as well.
Right, okay. So it's all very by the book.
Yes, there's a lot of rules to follow if you want it signed off. So it's quite actually a complex thing to organise.
Yeah.
Which is good to have other people who've done it before, which is where Wyatt really is just an amazing mentor who gives up his time to come up to Thredbo with swimmers who are aiming for the mile.
And how many times has he swum that?
So he's done 3 ice miles. He was actually the first Australian to ever do an ice mile.
Wow.
And now he dedicates a lot of time every winter to drive all the way to Thredbo and help other people try and make the mile.
You went up there, you got there, the water temperature was 4.5, it was a beautiful day, and you're all psyched.
Yeah.
And what happened?
Oh, so we were aiming initially for... I was, of course, aiming for the mile in the lead-up, but then we also had the option
1.6 kilometres,
1.6, yes. And then once we got there, we also had the option of aiming for a kilometre and still having that recorded as an achievement.
Okay, that's good.
And I just really psyched myself out, unfortunately, on the day. So I watched... I was, I think, the 5th swimmer in the water, and unfortunately, I watched everyone before me either, abort their swim before the kilometre or just make the kilometre.
Right,
so not really getting to the mile at that point. And I just sort of started thinking, well, the mile's impossible. I'll just aim for the kilometre.
Right, you just changed your mindset.
I just really changed my mindset.
Oh, gosh.
And so I got in the water and I made it, I actually felt quite good for the first few laps. Of course it's freezing, your hands and feet start to go straight away.
Right.
But I just had this mantra of
start to go, what do you...
Yeah, so they're initially painful and then they sort of just start to go numb.
Right.
And you do lose a lot of coordination, so you slow down, and I was really just focused on making sure my legs were still up and kicking and not sinking down.
Yeah.
And I just kept sort of saying to myself every new sort of symptom or feeling that I had from the cold, I just tried to say, acknowledge it, accept it, keep swimming. And it was working really well.
This is meditation in motion, as they say. Yes.
And it was interesting, actually, to see,
kind of witness
what was happening to your body. But unfortunately, I made it to the kilometre mark and I was feeling great, still feeling strong.
Great.
So I decided to keep going and aim for the 1.6.
Yeah.
I got to about 1.45, and at that point, you're a bit out of it. You're a bit hypothermic, a bit confused. I didn't know how many laps I had to go.
Okay.
And I turned this buoy and I remember thinking, I have 4 laps to go of this 80-metre course. My ears started ringing. I started actually getting a bit scared.
So you were thinking you had about 320 metres to go, which is a lot.
Which was a lot. And I just thought to myself, I'm not going to be able to do 4 more laps. I'm feeling a bit scared at how my body is feeling. At this turn of the buoy, I'm really close to the shore and where my support team are. I'm going to get out while I can still walk out myself.
Before I pass out.
Before I pass out, basically. And so I just sort of put my head up, signaled I was getting out, and swam out.
Yeah.
And at that point, someone told me that I had, you know, reached 1.45, so I had under 2 laps of the course to go.
Oh, so really 150, 160 metres to go. Wow.
You know,
so that's half of what in your head.
That I thought I had. And in hindsight, I was kicking myself. I was like, you know, I would have been able to do that. You know, at the time, there's no way I could have known that.
No.
And I'm just trying to come to peace.
They need to have those big boards like they do in the sporting events where they hold it up at the side of the pitch. You know, one more lap to go, or, you know,
exactly.
Even I think in the marathon as well, they have things like that, you know, final lap or
some kind of distance measure. And we
but
had
I suppose you can't really be thinking about looking to the shore to focus, can you?
Well, we did have a whiteboard.
Oh, you did.
And I remember being able to see it initially every now and then, but then I think I don't know, I just couldn't really see it.
Yeah.
And people apparently were telling me, you know, only 1-2 to go, and I do not remember that at all. I couldn't hear anything.
Because you were saying something about your ears.
Yeah, my ears really started ringing really loudly, and that's what, it just spooked me.
Alarm bells.
Honestly. I think every other kind of symptom that was happening to me, I could justify as, you know, well, I'm cold, I'm hypothermic, like, that makes sense. The ears ringing, I had never really, I didn't know was a symptom of hypothermia, and I hadn't heard anybody else talk about. So it did just scare me. I was like, don't people's ears ring before they faint?
Yeah, that's
I don't
want
to faint out here.
No. So you got out. We saw video footage of you trembling and very distressed getting out, and then even more distressed when you were found out the news that you were short-changed yourself.
So frustrated with myself. You know, I was trying to still be happy with my achievement of a kilometre.
Oh, yeah. Everybody was for you.
I know. And I was my harshest critic,
yeah.
I think. And it really did teach me that I do not deal with personal failures very well, which I don't know. I think I'd never really put myself in that situation before to realise that I am very, very bad at coping with that.
You're a true athlete now, Liv.
Do you know, it's funny because every open water swimming event, you know, of course I never place, I never, you know, do that well, but I love it. It's fun. I never feel disappointed at the end.
Whereas happy with the participation
yes,
medal.
Honestly, I love it. Whereas this ice mile, I don't know what it was, but I was just so, so upset with myself and very, very disappointed.
Mm. The disappointment, you thought about it, you went home, still disappointed.
Very disappointed. My poor husband having to deal with me in an absolutely foul mood for probably a week. And then it was really, I owe this to our medical support who was there on the day, Edwina from New South Wales.
Okay.
She actually reached out to me and, you know, sort of just expressed that she really wished we could come back and I could have another go because she really wanted me to be able to do the mile and I was so close. And sort of before that message, I really hadn't thought that that was an option to go back in the same season because it's a lot of travel and expense for everybody.
Yeah.
So I've reached out to her and to Wyatt again, and it turned out a few of the New South Wales swimmers also wanted to go back this season.
So it wasn't a set date.
No.
They did a new one for people who wanted to try again.
Wanted to have another go.
Wow.
So it was really lucky that it all just, you know, she'd reached out to me because I wouldn't have reached out otherwise.
No. You would have just been cross.
I would have just been upset for 11 months until, until next year.
Dang, well, I'm not going to do it again. That was a waste of time.
So it was really lucky, actually. And then, of course, the tricky thing is trying to time it so the water's not going to be too warm.
Yes,
so you're getting sort of towards the end of the season now. And we were really lucky. There was that cold snap in early September. And it was almost blizzard.
Oh, it was freezing.
Conditions. It was so cold, which really worked out for us to go back and have another go.
The weather's terrible. Woo!
So we went back up early September. We drove up on the 8th and the swim was on the 9th.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were 4 or 5
right
swimmers this time, all having their second go.
Really?
Yeah. So it was almost too cold when we got up there.
No.
I think in the morning, the day before, the water was, I think, under 2 degrees.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Oh my God. That makes me have a cold shock thinking of that. Oh wow. That is
very
crazy.
Horrible. You know, snow all over the ground. Oh, wow. It was snowing the day we were there. It was, you know, we were all very nervous, obviously, because we had all tried before in 4 degree water and hadn't made it. So really quite nervous, but luckily conditions did improve over the course of the day. Sort of the sun would come out here and there. And so by the time I ended up swimming first, and by the time I got in, the water was sort of between 3.5 and 3.8, so about a degree colder than last time.
Were you pleased to go first?
I was. I wasn't meant to go first, and then there was a really last minute shuffle and I ended up going first, so I think in a way I wasn't as prepared. I'd just eaten this big protein block that was sitting in my stomach like a rock. But
maybe that fueled you.
Yeah, maybe. And also I think I didn't have time to psych myself out because it was sort of like, oh, I'm actually going first now. Like, get ready, get in and just swim.
Yeah.
And I just kept telling myself, you know, just do it. Just get in and do it.
Yeah, the more you stood around talking, watching, then getting more nervous, I reckon first was probably a benefit.
I think it worked in my, to my advantage in the end. Like, just
definitely
not watch anybody else have a go, just get in and do it, which was
and
lucky.
Also inspiring for everybody else.
Hopefully.
Yes. So you got in, it was freezing, you swam. And did you experience the same symptoms?
Yes, it's interesting that the second attempt in the same season historically has quite a low success rate.
Right.
And I just kept thinking, oh, that won't apply to me because I was so close last time.
Yes.
But, you know I can do it. I found it so much harder the second time.
Really?
Yes, like the first lap, I started to think, oh no.
I've made a huge mistake.
I think almost the first attempt, there was a little bit of ignorance is bliss. The first few laps, you know, you kind of don't appreciate how far you have to go.
Mm.
Whereas this time I knew how far I had to go. And the first lap, I was, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to do it. But I just kept, and this time we did have good lane markers that I could see in the water.
Oh, good.
So I could see how far I'd gone, and I just kept thinking to myself, if you want to get out, you can, but that's it. Like, I'm not going to come back a third time.
Mm.
So if you ever want to swim an ice mile, and I just kept saying, you know, in my whole life, if you ever want to do it, you just have to do it now. You can't get out.
Yes. Wow. That's true determination. So when with your, we were talking a little bit about this just before, about the mental strength of people to do things. So did you do much training for mental determination and fortitude?
I think that's the area I lacked the first time around. I don't know, I think maybe I had a bit of an ego and I thought, you know, I've swum through the winter, I've done ice baths, like I think I'll be able to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I think it'll be easy for me. And so then that combination of being, you know, on, and I'm not a very...
No, you're not an egotistical person.
No, but I think internally I just sort of assumed I could do it.
Yeah.
And so I think I was quite unprepared that first day, which also probably led to how my terrible state afterwards when I didn't manage to do it. And then even my second attempt, to be honest, I had not worked on my mental fortitude. It was really just stubbornness.
Right, okay.
And not wanting to feel how I felt after the failed attempt.
Okay. Because a lot of people talk, it's very popular these days, the Wim Hof program and the ice baths and the mind over matter type of, and the breathing and everything.
Yeah.
So to me, you didn't do any of those things. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're right, which I think is not an advantage. But
right, because I'm sure people listening to this would be like, what do you mean she didn't do that?
I know.
Because it seems to be the gateway for
definitely
people
and
these
days. I think I definitely could have prepared better in that regard, and who knows, I might have made it the first time and not had to go back.
Maybe. But anyway, I mean, you're obviously, you set the challenge and you were very happy to give it your best.
Yes.
And then to even go back and do it twice. So you were swimming, you felt worse, then you
so
thought,
much worse.
I don't care, I'm just going to keep going.
I like.
And when did you sort of Did you see a sign that you've done your 1.6 yes. or something?
What's yes. that? Luckily, we were better prepared with we had a massive lane markers this time on the side.
Right.
And I'd also asked my husband to blow the whistle, you know, once I got to 1 kilometre, just so I could match it in my head to my last swim.
Right.
And realise, you know, I might start to feel bad now, but I can do it. Like, just keep going.
Yeah.
And so, to be honest, there's a bit of a blank space for me. I don't know if I went into a meditative state or I was a bit hypothermic, yeah. but I sort of come back into focus in my mind around lap 18.
Like your body was just on autopilot yes. type of thing, just yep. going through, but your brain wasn't really...
Like, I must have been present, but I just don't have the best memory of sort of from, right. like, quite early on, actually.
It's called trauma.
Yeah. So it's
when
hard.
When you go to counselling, yeah. you'll be fine.
So yeah, it's hard to sort of describe from, I think, about like the kilometre lap to about lap 18. I don't really.
Really?
It was definitely harder this time. There was less to focus on as well because the water was a little bit dirty, so I couldn't really see the bottom.
Right.
So it was sort of just you and your brain and your body feeling absolutely terrible and telling you to get out, like, yep. please get out. Mm. But I do remember looking up and seeing that I was, you know, on my second last lap and I just had to turn the buoy and get back to the end and I was done.
I bet you swam pretty fast comparatively for that final
lap. It was the best feeling. And I just remember Wyatt and my husband John walked up and down the side of the pond almost every single lap with me. And
yes.
you could just turn your head and see them there. And it was really a great motivator.
Oh, how beautiful.
It was really, really lovely. Mm. Yeah, such good support. And just reaching the end was, you just want to get out, really. You don't even feel that happy at that moment.
Okay, I've done it. Get me out of here.
Just want to get out of the water and then...
Yeah, and then you have the big reheating process, yes. which is not instantaneous. You were saying you have to take it quite slowly to yes. reanimate yourself, basically.
Yeah, so that's sort of a whole...
Like a Frankenstein moment.
Honestly,
something.
It feels like it. And it's almost longer than the... Well, it is longer than the swim itself,
oh,
is the rewarming.
Yeah, so actually, how long did it take you?
Yeah, so it took me 36 minutes to do the mile.
That is insane. That is so fast.
It was a bit slower than I was aiming for, but...
36 minutes?
Yeah, and you really... You know, watching sort of the videos of myself back, I was keeping up my stroke rate, but I was hardly pulling through the water. Like, you do lose a lot of coordination.
That's like, I would do that in the bay. Yeah. If I saw 1.6, I'd be like, oh, yeah, 36, that was pretty good.
But we do stop and chat a lot in the bay.
We do stop and chat. But even so, that is so fast for a body that's literally freezing while you're doing it. Yeah. That's amazing.
I was happy. I wanted to spend as little time as I could in that water.
So you are a fast swimmer normally. So in standard conditions, what would be your time for 1.6?
Probably around like 31, 32.
Right.
And actually on my first swim, when I got out at 1.45, I was on track to do the mile in 33. So I was slower the second time around. Even at the 1 kilometre, I was a lot slower than the first time.
But the water was much colder.
Yes, it was. Yeah. I must have just been, you know, not quite as efficient.
Yeah, so you've had 36 minutes in the water and then they don't just go, here's a hot chocolate and a blanket. Well done.
No, so the rewarming process is a whole nother thing in itself.
Yeah.
And the first thing is, of course, you can hardly sort of get out of the water on your own. So it's always a very ungraceful exit from the water. But you have people there, they help you out of the water, and you just get straight in the car, which has been running the whole time you were in the water, so it's nice and warm.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even really bother with taking my bathers off first or anything. You just want to get out of that cold air.
Yes, the air must be like biting when you get out.
Terrible. And the day I swam, I think the wind chill was like minus 1 point something.
Right.
So you just need to get out of that environment and into the car.
Yep.
And I, in my experience, I typically had about 5 minutes from getting out of the water until when that intense shivering really kicked in. So, you know, you get into the car, you start rugging up.
It's almost like a spasm, isn't it? It's so violent.
Yes, and completely incontrollable. And the difference with that sort of shivering, I found, compared to, you know, being cold in the bay or being cold after my ice bath, is that it's completely non-stop for about 25 minutes, like not a single break in the shiver.
No, 25 minutes.
It's
wow.
really, and like, you know, luckily my
body's
like
kind of jerking. Yeah.
It's really, I found that more tiring. Wow. Obviously than the swim, because all your muscles are just going crazy.
All right, so you're doing your shivering for 25 yes. minutes, like actual severe shivering, not just a yes. little bit, oh, that's cold shivering.
No, and absolutely no break, like just constant shivering. And I was pretty lucky with my recovery. I was quite, you know, cognizant, and I could talk through most of it.
Right.
Whereas some people really sort of retreat into themselves and can't really have a conversation for about 15 minutes.
Right.
So I was really lucky in that regard. I sort of remember it all mostly and could talk to my husband and talk to the medical officer who's in the back of the car.
Oh, that's good.
Which is good.
Reassuring for everybody else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you're not saying anything, it can be a bit of a worry.
Yes, and I think the other worry is if that shivering doesn't start, so you get out of the water and you don't start shivering, that's another bit of a warning sign that you're too hypothermic
right.
for that shivering to kick in. So as horrible as it is, it's good to start shivering.
The body's moving itself to try to create heat and...
Yes, warm yeah. yourself back up.
Mm.
So, and the other thing I found really important in that time, which I was lucky I had my husband John to remind me, because you do forget, is to just try and relax into the shivering.
Right.
Because I found if you do start to sort of physically tense up, and that's when I think you can injure yourself. Like people have really hurt their backs and their ribs. I think someone's even, you know, cracked a rib or had a fracture in there, you know, a little spinal fracture from this shivering when you just tense up and try and fight it.
Yeah, okay. Good to know.
Yeah.
I'll keep that in mind next time I go for a walk. Oh, that's amazing. So, Liv, it's an incredible story. And I believe you are now the illustrious list of only 30 Australian swimmers who
yes.
have completed this challenge.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
It worked out quite well, actually. It was the day after my 30th birthday.
Oh.
I became the 30th Australian to swim an ice mile. So it was poetic in the end.
Yes, that's so good. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
I know there's a few more things on the horizon, some new challenges for
yes.
you. Always. And you'll learn from each experience. So we look forward to hearing more about those in the future.
Thank you.
Well, thanks so much for your time. And
thank you.
We'll see you later.
Thanks, Jane.
Bye.